Daydreaming About Dragons, Reply Show Pollen. This is Judd Carlman, and I am rocking out this week with a reply show. I've got a lot more replies I need to get to, and I'm excited to talk to you all. So this is nice. I thought I needed to wait a little longer, and I didn't. It's good. If this is your first time listening to the show, please go listen to a show that has a normal number. They will be structured in a way that might be more pleasing to you. They usually start off with a table technique. Not usually. They start off with a table technique, and then they go into Inspiration Goat and talk about a piece of media that and how I can use something from that media that inspires me at the gaming table. This reply shows are when folks send me messages or send me emails, and we talk about gaming a little bit and bounce off each other. And it is often delightful, but it is very different. And some people don't dig it. So I number them entirely differently, and they don't show up as episodes. They show up as like as kind of code words. So this show is Reply Show Pollen, because pollen is rocking my world this week, and all the cars are covered in yellow dust, and it's a little rough, but it's also delightful to see the weather changing and to be getting sun. It's really nice. Really nice. So let's get to it. We're going to start off with our friend Thomas from Denmark, who sent an email, and then we will go into some voice messages. And thank you all very much for joining me. And thank you all, everyone here, who sent in words, who took the time to reply to me. It means more to me than I can say. Thanks. Let's get to it. All right. I got a really interesting email from Thomas K. So here we go. Thomas K. from Denmark. Thank you so much for writing in. I was wondering if I could ask a piece of advice regarding starting up a new campaign. I'm a big fan of the campaign Bible or starting handout, as I find a good way to frame the situation and present what's important about the world. They put everyone at the table on the same page, literally, and yet I find them hard to write, especially if the assumptions of the presented material aren't completely congruent with the assumptions in the game system or published setting being used. This is particularly relevant for an upcoming Stars Without Number game I'm preparing, for its setting draws heavily from retrofuturistic Dune-esque concepts of space drama with a dash of travelers and abilities. Man, I understand how that is. I'll send. There's a link in the show notes where me and Sean Nittner are playing a game that's exactly that. I suppose the question comes down to this: how to set up a new campaign that requires some conceptual buy-in and situation framing without drowning everything in endless regressive context while not oversimplifying the setting. I'm very curious about your views. Well, yeah, that's very difficult. That's a difficult question. I think a couple of things will get you there. I think art will get you there very quickly. You know, they say the cliche is that a picture is worth 1,000 words, and sometimes that's just very true. So, you know, set up a Pinterest board and share it with everybody. And the other thing you can do is limit the character types. You know, say, hey, you know, these are the roles I'd like filled. You know, the merchant prince or whatever it is that is going on, give creative constraints so that people don't just make, you know, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker when you wanted Paul Atreides and Gurney Halleck. And there's a fine line of the difference between the two, right? I mean, you can squint and you can see that they're built from similar building blocks, but at the same time, they're very different. And yeah, it's just a very different thing. I think there are little things you can do to make it different. Let them know what gear they can buy. You know, they can only buy knives and stun guns and shields. Then they're going to build very different characters than if they get everything that's in Stars Without Number. And I think with Stars Without Number, I think you've got to really kind of narrow it down. Let them know what planets are around. Let them know what's going on. What's the situation? So to sum up, how do you do this? I think you can rely on art. I think you don't do a huge setting dump. I think you give them a vibe of what you're going for. Hey, guys, I'm going for knife fights in space. I'm going for Dune. I'm going for a Dune vibe. I would love to make a game about, you know, a noble house or whatever it is, or a you know, a tribe on a barren world that is thrust in the middle of politics, of galactic politics that the Space Emperor visits. Whatever it is, and you can also ask players questions as they start to give you know, as they start to make character ideas. You know, hey, I'd like to play a warrior. Cool. What did your warrior do when the Emperor sent their elite guards to kill your tribe? Oh, interesting. So you can ask good questions, too, and that will give them context and allow them to create context. So three tools, right? Art, letting them know what you want, limiting choices, and asking good questions during character creation. I think in a situation like that, you've got to make characters all together, right? Because the game isn't doing exactly what you want it to do. So you need to be there to supervise and make sure that everybody gets on a similar page. Does that make sense? All right. Thank you very much, Thomas K. I appreciate all of your support, and I appreciate you sending me an email. It's wonderful. Thanks.
Hey, Jed, this is Daniel. Just sending a quick message. I just finished listening to episode 70, where you were talking about My Neighbor Totoro and Kiki's Delivery Service and the kind of story that they tell. And thanks for that, because I have been trying to kind of articulate what is it that I like about those movies and the kind of story they tell, where it's all about problems and challenges, but not really conflicts. Along the same lines, I've been watching Hilda on Netflix with my two girls, and it's a sort of the same thing. They have problems and challenges, not real conflicts, no big villain, but certainly things that they have to overcome in a world that they just sort of like this, you get to discover, but it's never really explained. So I'm going to have to check out some of those books that you mentioned, because I have some of them and I just haven't read them, to see if they can help me tell those stories. And I know that my girls will certainly like it. So thanks for that, and thanks for the show.
Daniel, it is always lovely to hear from you. It's just nice to hear your voice again. So thank you very much for calling in. Hilda is amazing. I really like it. It's an adorable show on Netflix, and I can see that. I think Hilda and the young ladies from My Neighbor Totoro and the witch would all get along. I think that would be a group who would have a lot in common and get into cool adventures. So I can see that. Hilda's very, very much in that vein. And that's difficult. That's a difficult type of game to run. It's a different muscle. And I wonder how I would do at it over a long term. I wonder if I would be looking for villains or if I would fall back on old tropes. I don't know. Jonaki and I played a little bit of Wanderhome, and I loved what we made up. We just haven't gone back to it, so I need to get back to it. And the book should be coming before too long, so that's exciting. But yeah, it's something I want to get back to. We haven't played it in a while, but I still remember where we were. And I remember a lot of vivid stuff we made up. So it's all still there. We just have to get back to it. And yeah, it's different. It's different. I think the rhythms, it's important. Kind of story rhythms and easing into it. And it makes people, you know, when you get into a rhythm that is comfortable, you know, people get comfortable. And then those interrupts can either be jarring or brilliant, right? Or both. And I think that's what is interesting about what we do. Whether it's, you know, quest at a tavern, buy supplies in town, wilderness to dungeon, dungeon back to town, train, you know, do it all over again. Those kinds of rhythms are important, and it's also important to break them, you know. So, good stuff. Thank you, Daniel. You got me thinking. You got me thinking more. I'm percolating. There's more to come. Thanks.
Hey, Judd. I just got done listening to episode 72 of Daydreaming About Dragons, and some of your thoughts about jokes and human role-playing games have really struck a chord with me. I recently picked up Pugmire, the role-playing game, to play with my family, and included some of the additional materials available from Eddie Webb, the designer, including one of the design documents, and it talks about some of his thoughts about the game related to humor, and how there's some deeper meaning underneath it, including a lot of thoughts about melancholy and nostalgia. And it turns out I think it's the perfect game for me to play with my family during the pandemic, when we'll have thoughts about the outside world and what it means to want to be in the outside world, and what things will be like after this is all over. It seems like the perfect game for it, but told in a lighthearted way, or a way that can be lighthearted to have us explore those feelings. Check it out.
Jim, thank you for sending me to look at Pugmire. That looks really interesting. And yeah, I like it. I'm fascinated. It reminds me a little bit, it's very different, but there's something there about four-legged identity, that reminds me of Wolf Spell by Ebadiah Ravichal, and I think maybe because I want to play those games with the same people. Here's my problem with Pugmire, is that I think I would have trouble hurting any characters, because in Pugmire you play these anthropomorphic dogs in armor going on D&D-ish adventures, and I don't know if I could hurt a fictional dog. I did it once, and in a game with a friend of mine who loves dogs, and I still feel shitty about it. I think I still owe him an apology. I'm going to apologize to him next time I see him. But yeah, I don't know if I could hurt a dog in game. I think it would mess me up. And it's funny, I just had a conversation about this with Jonicky. We were talking about Band of Blades, and there is, in Band of Blades, your unit of soldiers, your legion, it's a kind of decimated legion, but your army, as such as it is, can follow a different chosen, and the chosen are like these demigods. It's very Black Company. It's awesome. And these chosen, the demigods are very kind of alien, but also very human and unnerving and immensely powerful. And one of them deals a lot with animals, and you can talk to animals, and you can gain certain animalistic traits if they have certain stuff. And I was going to ask people not to take it because I didn't want to have to hurt animals, but I also wanted to run a war game, right? And I didn't want to soft pedal a war game. This is not at all what you sent me on. You sent me on a Pugmire thing to talk about humor and goodwill and things you want to play with your family during COVID, and I am talking about not hurting animals because I'm a big softy. So anyway, and war and how I don't want to soft pedal it. Anyway, this is not at all what you called in about. Thank you for suggesting Pugmire. The game looks delightful. I'll put a link to that and Wolf Spell in the show notes in case anyone is interested. And thank you very much for calling in, Jim. I appreciate it. I appreciate your thoughts and the time it took. And thanks. I look forward to hearing again. Let me know how the Pugmire game went with the family. I hope it went well.
Hey, Judd. Mike Miller here from Incarnine Press and Indie Games Explosion. A thought on Lower Decks and celebratory style humor. To me, the joke on Lower Decks that is the most emblematic of its celebratory style of humor is when Rutherford transfers to a different department to see if he likes it, and he does really well, but he doesn't like it, so he has to tell his commanding officer, hey, I kind of want to transfer to a different department, and he's afraid of getting yelled at. And the joke is that every one of his commanders is like, yay for you! You're finding out your own personal self-actualization. That's awesome. And to me, because I see Star Trek as utopian futurism, that is celebratory. And it's celebratory because it keeps the thing that I like about Star Trek, that I feel is the heart and soul of Star Trek. if someone watched Star Trek and felt that the most important thing about Star Trek is, I don't know, the technical precision of Starfleet always prevails, they might feel that Lower Decks is not celebratory, but is instead breaking the thing that they love about Star Trek, and making fun of it. And the point of Session Zero is to make sure that everyone's on the same page about what they feel is the bones, the essence, the soul of whatever media inspiration that they're taking, and everyone agreeing, hey, we're not going to step on that. We're going to make jokes in celebration of that rather than making that the butt of the joke. So just my thoughts. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you, Michael. That was a great, great reply. And that scene in Lower Decks stuck out to me, too. It was very emblematic of what I love about that show and what makes it utopian. And there's something else going on there that I think needs to be mentioned. And that is that the conflicts are kind of new conflicts. In order to do that, you have to push past the lazy conflicts. And I can think of a time that I did that in a Stars Without Number game, where a friend of mine was making a character, and his mother was this amazing astrophysicist, and his dad was this spaceship pirate captain. You know, as happens in science fiction games, mom's a brilliant astrophysicist, dad's a pirate, you know, ship captain. And he was like, you know, I think my dad gets into a lot of relationships when he's out in space, and there's a lot of jealousy, and I'm really angry at him. And I was like, you know, okay, maybe we might be able to go with that, but let me put another idea out for you. What if they didn't? What if that's not where the conflict is? What if these are two smart adults in, you know, centuries ahead of us, and they figured this stuff out? And you know, when he goes out to space, they know that he sees other people, and when he's out, she sees other people, but they're each other's primary, and there it is. And I feel like sometimes with science fiction, it's about, even utopian science fiction, it's about new interesting problems rather than kind of the old boring jealousies and pettiness. And I'm nothing against that. Sometimes that's really fruitful, but sometimes it just feels like the first thing we grasp at because we're looking for something interesting, and it's not always interesting. And I've watched friends navigate polyamorous relationships, and it's a very new paradigm for me. I had never considered that, but it's complicated, and it's a new kind of complicated, which I think is interesting. And yeah, so anyway, it's just another like log on that science fiction, you know, old problems fire. You know, let's look at new problems. Let's see what else we can find, and not just stir up old drama because we don't know what else to do. Because quite frankly, there's nothing in Stars Without Number to help us navigate conflicts with jealous families, right? There's just nothing there to help us. So why do it? You know, that's not where the pew, pew, pew is. Anyway, I agree with you 100%. That moment in Lower Decks was just a lovely little way to show utopia, right? Your manager is actually happy for you. Whew, we live in a capitalist hellscape. Anyway, keeping it positive. Thank you for your utopian thoughts, Michael. It's always lovely to hear from you. And send my best to Kat, and I'll talk to you soon. And that was Reply Show Pollen. Thank you all so much for joining me. If you would like to support the show, there are a number of different ways to do it. You can send me an email. You can email me an MP3. You can drop on the Anchor app and send me an MP3 through that, a minute at a time, which is a little frustrating for some folks. You can also just record an MP3 and send it. You can tweet at me. You can at InspirationGoat, all one word. And those are the main ways to do it. My email is judd.carlman@gmail.com, judd.carlman@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show, another way to do it is to drop a review. You can head over to my DMs Guild account. You can purchase a couple PDFs. You can see how I set things up when I run my D&D games, what kind of weird tables I like to have, what kind of lists I like to have, just, you know, things I like to have at hand so that I can make up stuff quickly and on the fly and move with the player's brilliance and imaginations and not stay on the road too much if I don't need to. You can also purchase my book, Dictionary of Moo. You can go grab a PDF at itch.io. You can go to my Threadless shop and grab a t-shirt or a shower curtain or a duvet. What would you like? A geeky duvet that talks about what science fiction is or, you know, something? Or has a lich head on it? Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want that in their house? So those are ways you can do it. All of the artist proceeds for the Threadless shop go to wonderful organizations, trying to like turn my nerdery and all that into something good. So if you go buy something like from them, Threadless drops them some money and then all of the profits go to them. And you can also go to Anchor and you can support the show on a monthly basis or just give me money that way. I appreciate it. People do it. And it is very appreciated. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you all so much for replying. All the folks who dropped me a line, I really appreciate it more than I can say. And that's about it. I will see you very soon. All right.